Heritage Week starts tomorrow, and on Tuesday evening, one of the events for Heritage Week is a special talk at Cork City Library that'll be given by Kathy Bradley, who co-wrote a book that chronicled one of the darkest moments in Irish maritime history. In 1828, the schooner Mary Russell was returning from Barbados to Cove when the ship's captain, William Stewart, murdered seven of the crew to the horror of the remaining crew members and 11-year-old Thomas Hammond, who had been entrusted to the captain's care. The story had been largely forgotten until 2010, when a book detailing the case was published. Kathy was the co-author of that book, and her talk on Tuesday tells the story behind the ship of seven murders.
Was not meant to be, as news like wildfire to the whole house of shillings. Mary Russell laid her anchor, Reverend Scoresby led the praise, as they huddled together in Queenstown, facing horror and despair.
Before they left port, a Captain Rains approached them, and he was after, he had sailed the same day from Cork on a different ship called the Hibernian, and he had lost his captaincy because he had been drunk and had not been behaving himself in Barbados. So he was looking for a spin home to Cork, basically. He was trying to hitch a ride, and Captain Stewart had refused him twice, but on the third time he allowed him on board. And that was really, I suppose, the beginning of the end for them. Captain Rains was from Cork, could speak Irish. He began to speak to the crew in Irish. Captain Stewart started to become a bit paranoid that they were going to actually take over the boat and Captain Rains was going to take charge. And he became very, very worried. He spoke to Captain Rains about speaking in Irish to the crew and asked him not to do that. And Captain Rains said, that's fine. He then proceeded to log the boat as like useless. He threw all the charts and the maps and everything overboard. He wasn't sleeping very well, and because he wasn't sleeping and the paranoia was building, it all, I think, just became too much for him. But when he did decide that he was going to kill them, he killed them in a very brutal way. Before he'd actually murdered them, he asked the boys to sail the distress signal. And he did, which is the flag upside down, and they sailed that, and a boat passed, and Captain Callender was the captain there, and they'd actually been lashed onto this boat in Barbados, and the distress signal, funnily enough, was actually a flag that they had borrowed off Callender because their distress signal wasn't there. So he recognised it, and he pulled up next to them. Captain Stewart asked Captain Callender to come on board, and when he did, he showed him the bodies and said that they were mutinying against him. I was very lucky that ship actually arrived at that time, because he was just beginning to tie the cabin boys, and Thomas Hammond was crying out saying, please don't do this, please don't do this, how are we going to get home? So Captain Callender actually removed him from the boat at that stage and put him onto his own boat, and twice Captain Stewart jumped overboard. On the second occasion, we were just off the West Cork coast, and he was picked up by some Galway hookers, little boats from Skibbereen, and the fishermen took him in. So when the boat arrived back in Cork, and if you can picture this, Betsy, his wife, had four children. She was pregnant with her fifth, lived in a beautiful house called Stewart House up the hill in Cove. And so when you look out of their front window, you're looking down on Roach's Point. So she'd have woken up to see her husband's boat docked in the harbour, happy days, he's home. But the whispers that reached her on the hill, and what she actually discovered was that her husband was missing. There were seven dead crew on board, and they had said her husband had done it. So that was very, very frightening.
The town crier was teary-eyed, calling the names of the dead. People sung as the seagulls cry above the ship.
The constabulary were contacted, and as luck would have it, Reverend Scoresby, whose account really helped me in my research, they were one of the first on the scene. So there's a first-hand account of what he saw, and it's not pretty. It was really, really a horrible, tragic scene that unfolded in front of him. But the magistrates were brought to there. Howes and Smith, who were alive. I won't say alive and well, because Smith's eye had been gouged out. House had been shot up but missed, but he was maimed. They were only dressed in shirts that were caked in blood. And in fact, you couldn't, from the eyewitness accounts, you couldn't actually make out their facial features. The blood was so dried on them. They had head wounds. But they had to remain on site. And the cabin boys, along with Thomas Hammond, had to remain on site in order to provide the information for the inquest. So the inquest was held, the coroner's court was held on board the boat. It reported that the captain was missing. However, the newspaper picks it up a couple of days later to say the captain had been found. The fishermen had brought him directly to Skibbereen and to the Coast Guard there. And from the Coast Guard, he had been interred by the police. So this was front page news. This was all of Cork poured out onto the streets to see this ghoulish, horrible man. There was a crush to get into the courthouse. You could not get into the courthouse. It was just unbelievable. And when he stepped out, they couldn't believe it. It was a small, 5'7" man with sandy hair. It was, he looked like anybody else. They expected this monster, and they were kind of horrified. I think they were kind of disgusted that he didn't look so evil. And when the verdict was given that he was guilty, the Baron refused to take it, Baron Penfather, refused to accept that. They said he'd be guilty and insane, and the Baron said, no, you cannot be guilty and insane. You're either not guilty by reason of insanity, or you're guilty. And the jury amended that straight away. They said, okay, he's not guilty by reason of insanity. Once Captain Stewart heard that he was not guilty, he fell to his knees and thanked the Lord for the divine providence that he was not a bad man, that something must have taken over his mind. Our mental institution at that stage was the South Infirmary, what we know today as the South Infirmary, so he was interred there. And he was just so lucky. He had a doctor called Dr. Osborne, and he was a very, very, very forward-thinking mental health care professional. He was just super. And he ensured that Captain Stewart, one of the things was to keep him occupied. Dr. Osborne asked Captain Stewart if he would start making wood carvings. And he did. He started making wood carvings of boats. Captain Stewart saved all the mutton bones from the patient's plates, and he polished them to nearly ivory. And he presented Dr. Osborne with a polished replica of the Mary Russell in exact proportions.
So far away from home, boys, far, far across the foam, seven souls lay dead, boys, never to come home.
I never planned for it to be a book. I did the project for me to learn about it, for me to learn different ways of researching, of how to put it back together. And Con Collins read it. I said yes. So they gave me the gift of Alana, and between us, the book came out. So I've given the talk for UCC Historical Society here, and I've done it in quite a lot of the historical societies, including y'all, down through the years. I'm really lucky, Enya Fortuna, who is actually studying her master's in performance art at the moment in Glasgow, but she was 16 at the time, and she made this her work experience. So she took on the persona of Thomas Hammond, the little boy, the 11-year-old boy, and she sketched the whole story for me. So the talk is actually Enya's visuals, as if you were the 11-year-old boy, and it's the visuals of it going through, and it tells the story in pictures. And we just explain what happens. And I suppose for me it's really important too that anyone who has a story in the past, go out and research it. I was a housewife sitting at home, and I was able to find the story. So if you have a passion for something, follow it and enjoy it, and really just enjoy the time that you're researching it and live in that moment.
Crushing their heads with a crowbar as they lay tight to the floor. Well, his ex, it became a massacre. It was evil to the core.
It needs to be told in the correct manner, and it needs to, the truth needs to be there. And it's a fascinating part of our maritime history. It's something that we shouldn't shy away from just because it's a nasty story or that it's a brutal story. I don't believe Captain Stewart was a bad man. I do think that he's always regretted it. He continued to pray for the seven souls that he had a hand in taking out of this world. It was an unfortunate event. but it was the most terrifying tale for sailors at that time. If you can imagine Cove back in the 1820s, there was a huge amount of people out of work. There was an awful lot of sort of ex-army and people who come back from wars, and they were all looking for work. And Captain Stewart was known as a really good man. So he had this pick of people going in. They were all delighted to be there, and yet there was only two of them came back alive.
Kathy Bradley, who's co-author, along with Alana Hopkin, of The Ship of Seven Murders. And let me tell you, there's so much more to that story than is in that interview. I thoroughly recommend you pop along to Cork City Library on Grand Parade on Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. for the talk. It's a free event, and you're all welcome. The Ship of Seven Murders is available through the Collins Press, and the music you heard is The Ballad of the Mary Russell by R.P. Coleman, who's from Mull, I've been told. It's available at cdbaby.com.